Welcome back to Yang Daily. Wait, what day is it? What do you mean I'm late? Okay, yeah, I am late, and I apologize. I was pressed for time yesterday, and there's been nonstop news, and I got completely overwhelmed. The good news is this is going to be a big fat episode. You've waited long enough, let's get to it. Real quick, I need to add some detail regarding the Yang Speaks podcast. According to a Variety article referencing the show's producers, the podcast is scheduled to begin in May, will air weekly, and will broadly cover the future of the U.S. economy and society, featuring in-depth discussions with thought leaders on a range of topics, including tech, public policy, sports, entertainment, pop culture, and presumably anything else on Yang's mind. Sorry for not including that the other day. I set the article aside and forgot about it. It's good to know that the podcast will at least be weekly. I hope it will at least be a couple hours long as well. That said, we have a new UBI congressional candidate. A fellow Yang ganger, Burke Anderson, is running for Nevada on the flagship policy of a UBI funded by small distributions from a variety of industries, as well as a voluntary state income tax, which would go to a fund projected to provide $250 to $1,000 per resident per month. Though it would vary. His other policies are disinfecting public places with a new highly effective and environmentally friendly sanitizing agent called Decon 7, and expanding access to trade and vocational education. Find his website below and consider supporting him, because a fight for UBI anywhere is our fight. On to the bad news. Unemployment numbers came in this week, and if you thought last week's 3.3 million was shocking, ho-ho, you're in for a treat. 6.6 million filed for unemployment this week, a 3,000% rise over the norm, as much as 5,800% in some areas, making for an even 10 million in the last 2 weeks, which would be about 10% unemployment. And bear in mind, that is only those whose applications have been received, which, from the anecdotal reports we've been getting, is likely far underselling the actual number, as so many have been unable to get through the bureaucratic firewall of failure to even be measured yet, not to mention those who are not employed but not applying for unemployment. And Congress has chosen to throw all of that weight onto an already failing bureaucratic system with no thought for the consequence. There's no telling when or if many will receive aid, even among the people who are not actively excluded. This is what was chosen when they knew they could simply send everyone money with no bureaucracy required. It's unforgivable and will only prolong and inflame the suffering from this virus and the economic fallout. So, record levels of unemployment. We need something to balance that out. I know. How about record levels of debt? Yes, indeed, Americans' collective debt has already grown to $14 trillion, beating out the high water mark during the last recession, just as our 10 million unemployed beats out the record of the last recession. And we're only just getting started on this one. Put debt and a lack of income together, and you get record high bankruptcies, though those numbers will have a further time lag. And that's not all. According to a Politico article, banks are warning that the $350 billion lending program for struggling small businesses won't be ready when it launches Friday because the Trump administration has failed to provide them with the necessary guidelines and has set requirements for the loans that are unworkable. It could delay the assistance for weeks or longer. Banks not only have operational and technical questions about how the program will work, but also bigger concerns about the degree to which they'll be responsible for verifying borrower information and then held liable if things go wrong. An issue of paramount concern for banks is the extent to which they'll be expected to vet borrowers, approving loans, and distributing funds. The Trump administration said banks would need to verify that a borrower was in operation as of February 15th. And had paid employees while also confirming average monthly payroll costs. Lenders will need to establish a process which will necessarily be manual to ensure that payroll calculations and other requirements are met. This will in turn entail a delay of weeks or months as lenders establish the necessary policies and procedures to train their personnel. Banks also say the required 2-year loan period is unreasonably short for struggling borrowers. Many banks have already indicated that they will not be able to use the program under the current terms. In summary, our government crafted and passed a bill full of assistance designed to arbitrarily judge who is worthy of help, exclude those deemed unworthy, shove it through a tangled mess of bureaucracy, despite knowing it would hurt many and delay all aid, and they didn't even have any clue how they would implement it. Cue the slow clap. You've really outdone yourselves. But wait, there's more. The Trump administration has also refused to open a special enrollment period for Obamacare, denying millions of Americans the ability to sign up for approved health care insurance plans, even if they're willing to pay for it because, well, he's done everything else possible to sabotage our pandemic response. Why stop now? The only ones permitted to apply for Obamacare at the moment are those recently unemployed, as that is a standing provision. For anyone else, you can only apply for a temporary insurance plan. You can find the details in the link below. But the coup de grace of government ineptitude is this. While people with direct deposit connected to their IRS accounts are scheduled to receive their stimulus grant the week of April 13th, those without a direct deposit linked, who need a physical check, could be waiting up to 5 months. Yes, I said 5 months. Take a moment to let that sink in. The checks wouldn't even begin going out until May, then about 5 million would be sent per week for 20 weeks. By the time some people get their emergency stimulus, the crisis could be largely over, and I bet you a lot of those will be arriving into a mailbox of a foreclosed house or recently overturned apartment. There is no way to properly describe how incompetent our government is or how shameful it is that we voted these officials into office and have allowed it to come to this. If we had UBI going into this crisis, we wouldn't be in this situation. No one would be in financial panic, consumption and thus the economy would be shored up, and we would be ready to distribute stimulus immediately. If you do not have a direct deposit set up with the IRS, you'll need to do it in about the next week if you want your money in this lifetime. By contrast, many are calling for the Federal Reserve to establish accounts for every citizen as a right, and this could have many important benefits. First and foremost, it would be an instantaneous delivery method for UBI or any other stimulus to the people. It would take no more than a few keystrokes to credit every American's Fed account with $1,000 each month. Two, it would cover the roughly 25% of Americans who are currently unbanked or underbanked, allowing everyone access to a federal bank account via the internet or through the post office. Three, it would put an end to private banks being too big to fail. None of us enjoyed bailing out the big banks who had screwed us in the last recession, but we had to because Americans had no alternative for moving our money around. With a Fed-for-all account, private banks would no longer have a monopoly. They would be an optional supplement and thus not necessary. They would have to sink or swim on their own instead of exploiting the Fed and the people. This would also put an end to their underhanded lending practices, as they would now be on the line for the consequences when the loans go bad. For all these reasons, establishing Fed for all accounts may be one of the most important things we can do and would certainly complement a UBI. You can read about it further in the article below. Give Directly, on the other hand, has joined Humanity Forward and other charitable organizations in showing up the government by actually supplying help to Americans in a timely manner. Give Directly is pledging $10 million to 9,000 low-income families in installments of $1,000 each. They have already sent out 200 payments to SNAP recipients via Propel's Fresh EBT app and will be adding 1,000 more next week who can receive cash via a prepaid card, bank transfer, mailed check, Venmo, PayPal, or through a MoneyGram agent. They say the Treasury Department is at such a loss as to how to get the stimulus money to people that they are consulting with GiveDirectly for advice. Speaking of employment in the economy, Scott linked an article that he wrote back in 2016 on the topic of the evolving nature of consumption in the economy, and while it's a concept I've considered, Scott presents it in a particularly fascinating perspective. He delves into how the greed of corporations crashing the economy and the decades-long slow erosion of wages versus cost of living has permanently changed the way we interact with the economy by reducing consumption. Diminishing discretionary funds and economic crises have combined to drive austerity in American households, cutting back on unnecessary expenses, and a new way to spend, or not, has arisen in its place. what Scott calls the sharing economy. This is the economy of free services, such as YouTube and Twitch, where people can be entertained or exchange information for free and entertain or educate others for free, all without leaving home. We're all accustomed to this economy now, at least the newer generations are, but it's a stark departure from what came before. This free sharing economy only continues to grow and subsume more of our collective time, time we would otherwise have spent on employment or paying for goods and services. The erosion of wages and greed of the rich is slowly eroding consumption in general. As consumption retracts, so too does the economy, which is based on consumption. Less people buying means less production, means less jobs, means less consumer buying power, means less consumption, and so on. And this is a point I make often. People not having enough money is not just a problem for the poor, it's a problem for the rich as well. Wealth generation of any kind ultimately depends on consumption. If that dries up, so too do the profits and everything else. This is why UBI is a vitally needed fix for the economy. Capitalism has lost its way and is consuming itself, allowing greed to erode the foundation of the economy, which will ultimately, and soon, see the downfall of us all, the greedy included. UBI ensures a basic level of consumption, and it enables people to be more productive, giving them the capital and freedom to pursue work they value, spurring entrepreneurship and highly productive labor, whether as employee or otherwise. It encourages both consumption and productive work, both of which feed off each other to grow the economy. This is what Scott and Andrew mean when they speak of UBI saving capitalism. Without UBI, our consumer economy will continue to slowly consume itself until there is nothing left but a giant sharing economy in which no one can afford basic needs. Keep this argument in mind for those critics who are concerned primarily with the economic side of things, and please read and bookmark Scott's wonderful article below. It's also an important reminder that some of the effects of this crisis on both employment and consumption will be permanent. Beyond Slavery posted a brief animated clip detailing how wage slavery and workplace exploitation can be alleviated with the UBI, and exploring the question of what it is to be free, concluding that one must have the power to reject undesirable employment without terrible consequences. It's a good resource. I advise giving it a watch and bookmarking it for later reference. As some of you may know, Dolly Parton is a big-time philanthropist, and as it turns out, she actually provided a temporary basic income of, wouldn't you know it, $1,000 a month for families affected by a wildfire. It turned out to be a huge success, helping people get back on their feet and serve as one more piece of evidence in favor of UBI. It lasted for 6 months. No one stopped working. Everyone spent the money responsibly and ended up reclaiming the homes they had lost and better preparing for future emergencies by saving and purchasing insurance. They found the basic income far more helpful than any other kind of assistance during the crisis, such as item donations. Here's some of what recipients had to say about it. The checks were important because we live in a money world, but just as valuable was the freedom and dignity. The Gatlinburg community has changed. People are helping people they weren't helping before. You can't buy that. The Reeds say their views on people who receive government assistance have evolved as a result of benefiting from the My People Fund. Sometimes people get into situations and you might think, well, it's just their own fault, their own bad decisions, but it really isn't. They tried. They are trying. David Reed says, in a strange way, I wouldn't change what happened, Deborah Reed says, of the wildfire. It's made us grow as people to be better people. If you were a Gatlinburg resident who lost your home, it didn't make any difference if you were the richest person in town or the poorest, because the fire equalized everything. The universality of the My People Fund cash assistance implied as much. So, pretty much 100% reinforces everything Scott and others have been saying about UBI. It makes people healthier, happier, more productive members of society, and helps us move up Maslow's hierarchy of needs to where we can get beyond being preoccupied with survival and start to self-actualize, empathizing with others and working to make our neighbors and communities stronger. I can't say it enough. UBI is the next step in upgrading human civilization to achieve our full potential as a species. I don't see anything more important we can do in the world right now than this, as it makes us more capable of solving everything else. Similarly, St. Paul's City Council just voted to budget a $3.3 million fund with another $600,000 donated from local foundations and corporations. That will provide $1,000 grants to citizens and $7,500 grants to businesses. Unfortunately, it's very much not universal. Recipients must have at least one child and earn less than 40% of their area's median income and will be drawn from a lottery. It's also a one-time grant, not monthly. Pretty much as disappointingly far short of UBI as the Phase 3 bill, but progress, I suppose. Likewise, Canada's recently passed emergency response benefit is coming under fire for excluding those with annual income under $5,000, shockingly similar to the travesty our Congress tried to include in our own stimulus. Stop trying to screw the people, both of you. Just make it universal. Speaking of exclusion, Congresswoman Angie Craig has introduced an amendment to the Phase 3 bill to include some of the people excluded by the targeted definitions around dependents. I say some because, believe it or not, the Congresswoman repeated the error in her amendment, extending the $500 dependent bonus not to everyone who doesn't qualify for the $1,200, but to, quote, children younger than 19, students 24 and younger, and no age limit for dependents who are disabled. Brazil has now passed their own emergency basic income, but it, like others, is not universal. It provides $600 per month for unemployed, informal, and part-time workers, or $1,200 a month for single mothers for the next 3 months. It's very clear that humanity has a global affliction, not just of coronavirus, but also of exclusionary aid, and we need to get the hell over it fast. Meanwhile, Japan is going to be host to a new cash grant experiment, wherein 1,000 citizens, randomly selected from those who retweeted the giveaway announcement, will receive 1 million Japanese yen, equivalent to about $9,200, and will be subject to a series of 17 surveys over the following year to attempt to determine the effect on their lives. That's cool and all, but quite frankly, we have hundreds of these trials. There is a mountain of evidence proving UBI would work. We don't need more redundant data. We need to actually friggin' do it. We need to do a nationwide trial in the US right now. Yang made an appearance on The Daily Show to talk about emergency UBI with Ronnie Ching. It was just a short comedy segment and nothing of substance, as Ronnie's segments tend to be, so I wouldn't bother, but it's in the links if you want it. Yang also had a sit-down with a CNN commentator to discuss the racial overtones of the coronavirus, and it was similarly what you'd expect. A punk rock band, as well, wrote a song about UBI providing the power to say no, which found its way into the UBI Reddit thread. Gonna be honest, I didn't catch any lyrics beyond the chorus line of power to say no. Maybe you'll have better luck. Mike Breuer met his fundraising goal of $25,000 before the FEC deadline, and even exceeded it by a fair amount. Hats off to all who contributed. In some encouraging news, there may soon be a way to test who has recovered from COVID. Multiple labs are currently producing a test for coronavirus antibodies in the blood, which are only present if you've had the virus for some time. The tests are cheap, costing around $10, easy, involving only a prick of blood smeared on a stick, and fast, taking only minutes to return results. Compare that to our tests for active infection, which take days to return results and are only about 90% accurate. These antibody tests could be distributed en masse to the populace to be self-administered and determine who is immune to the virus. Some governments are currently exploring the idea of handing out immunity vouchers to those who pass the test, allowing them to return to normal activities such as it is. I have to say, it sounds like a dystopian novel of a two-tier society, but it doesn't make sense. I just wonder how it will play out when a smaller portion of the population is stuck at home while others are free to roam. Will those at home be supported or abandoned? To be fair, many of us are already abandoned. Finally, Humanity Forward's Creative Arts Contest has begun. The categories are visual arts, photography, writing, music, comedy, and film. The winner of each category will receive $1,000. To enter, follow the Twitter link below, find the thread for your category, and reply with your entry. I've already seen a lot of great entries, particularly in the photography and visual arts, and I hope I'll find some time to view more of them. You can find my favorites in my Twitter feed, including, believe it or not, a video of a woman assembling a sectional, which was inexplicably entertaining. One entry per category per person. Submissions end April 30th. May the best artists win. And that'll do it for today's Yang Daily. Get your taxes filed and your direct deposit set up pronto so you can get your $1,200. Check out Burke Anderson and consider supporting him. View and bookmark Scott's excellent consumption article and the Wage Slavery animated short. Submit your art entry to the contest. Join the Daily Income Movement conference calls and catch missed episodes on their YouTube channel. Sign all the petitions. Volunteer or donate on the Humanity Forward relief site. Consult HF, the Income Movement Aid Database, or United Way if you need help. Call and write Trump, Pelosi, McConnell, Graham, Dean, and Schumer why true UBI stimulus is the best solution and why it should be paired with a Fed for All account. Use ResistBot or Income Movement to easily contact all your representatives and post to Caesar's thread when you do. And don't forget to Yang Daily.